Hello, this is The Link Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel #LinuxShow. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
And we're back. It's the weekly episode of The Linux Show. In fact, it's our last weekly episode of The Linux Show, at least for 2003. We closed the book on Volume 6 and carry forward starting next year with broadcasting into our 7th year on the air. It's amazing that we're starting off Volume 7 just next week. Make sure, if you're a regular listener, that you do catch the show next week as we do our wrap-up, our Best of 2003 show. Next Tuesday night, but we're going to have a pretty low-key show tonight. We do have a guest tonight. We have Warwick Davies joining us from IDG, actually a sort of subunit of IDG. It's IDG World Expo. Warwick is the person in charge of both the Linux World Conference and Expo, as well as the Mac Expo, so he's going to be a pretty interesting guest to talk to about not only the Linux World Expo, but I've got some questions I want to have him field about the state of trade shows as they are right now, because there's quite a lot of buzz, at least going on in Chicago, about trade shows starting to make a comeback. So I'll hear what Warwick has to say in the second half of the show. But we do have most of the whole crew here tonight. We're not expecting Arnie to call in, but he just might. We don't know. He's in the middle of nowhere in Michigan, way out in the middle of a forest preserve, and he's going to try and give us a call if he can get a cell connection. There's no landline at the place where he's at, and he's pretty far out. It's remarkably forested in Michigan. People don't realize it's how much of that state is just covered with nothing but trees, and that's where Arnie is. But we got the rest of the crew here tonight. How are you doing tonight, Doc?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Been expecting rain here in Santa Barbara, and it keeps not happening because the rain gets close and says, oh, no, shit, this is Santa Barbara. We don't rain here. So
it goes
north and clobbers the crap out of the Central Coast, which already had the earthquake and everything else. So
how come I keep on hearing about mudslides?
It's not here. That's where Arnie lives. Arnie's near the mudslides. The sad thing about the mudslides, it was in Waterman Canyon, which was it's about as predictable as it gets. It's like I was just astonished that anybody would be dumb enough to hold a party in a canyon like that, where they're, and here they call them debris flows, actually. It's just, the mountains come down. I mean, the mountains are going up about as rapidly as mountains go up, and it's mostly ocean floor, and as soon as it gets soaked after a rain, after a fire, when the ground cover's been burned off, debris flows are so predictable that they have these debris catch basins that look like empty reservoirs at the bottoms of canyons along the whole front of the San Gabriel Mountains, and these guys just never, ever, ever should have been there. It was like having a party in traffic on a highway or something. It was just... It's dumb. And it's so sad, because it was preventable, utterly preventable. So, but that wasn't here. That's about 150 miles east of here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, at least you're safe.
Yeah, we get the same thing, but it's about every 50,000 years. So it's a little safer bet here.
Yeah. So you have a good Christmas?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Our adult kids are here. You know, our kids are 34, 33, 30, and then 7. So the 7-year-old had the 30s all doting on him, which is great. And interesting, he got lots of crap with batteries, and what he liked best was a Caroms board. Remember Caroms? I mean,
sure, yeah.
It's like a pool thing you play with, little wooden, now plastic rings. It turns out it's been like since the 1800s these games have been around. And I found my old Caroms pieces. I had every one of them, it turned out, but I didn't have the board. The board disappeared in one of the many moves. So I ordered one, and it came the day before Christmas, and it's like every day, he wants to play Caroms. which is cool. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's nice low tech fun.
Very low tech fun. You know, very kinetic, and you know, so it was great. It was great. Yeah, we had a good time. And then we're going down tomorrow to Pasadena, where they're going to have the Rose Bowl, to hang out with a bunch of University of Southern California fans. Purely coincidental that they're in the Rose Bowl, but it's going to be fun to be there. And we're going to go look at the floats in the middle of the night, if they'll let us in. There's worry that the bad guys may plant a dirty bomb in a Rose Bowl float, so they may not let anybody near them. Kind of hard to figure out how to do that, because it's all in residential streets where they queue. The buffer is a bunch of residential streets. So.
Yeah, and where they're assembled, I happen to be very familiar about where they're assembled.
Yeah.
Because I've gone and looked at it a number of times. The security is pretty...
Pretty high anyway, just because they don't want anybody knowing what they're doing, right?
Well, no, it's not a matter of security. It's always open to the public all during the...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's always open. But they have tons of guards because they have had histories of drunken frat boys going in and, you know, throwing water balloons or paint balloons at the opposing schools.
Wow.
And so there's always been high security in the float barn.
Wow.
And just not for, you know, dirty nukes.
Yeah.
But
so it's just like the samba schools in Rio for carnival.
Yeah. And it's absolutely amazing. The humongous barn. It's like an old dirigible barn. I don't recall what they actually used it for, but all of the floats are assembled inside of, or I should say most of the floats are assembled inside this one big barn within like the 72 hours before the parade, and they have a staff of a couple of thousand that go from float to float to float.
Wow.
And it's like there's like two companies that are really responsible for designing and paying those people who are the, you know, the paid staff. I'd say probably 50% of the staff is volunteer staff.
Wow.
The other half is paid. It's a huge enterprise. I happen to have a cousin. I don't know if you've ever watched the parade, but you know, have you ever noticed the guys in little white coats that line the parade route?
We'll
see them tomorrow, believe me. But there's all these guys in white coats. Those are the members of the actual Rose Committee. And there's 100 people that are in the Rose Committee every year. And it's pretty prestigious to be a part of it. It does a lot for your business if you're part of the Rose Committee in Pasadena. And I have a cousin who's been participating on the Rose Committee for 15 years now. And they live that stuff. I mean, they just live it. I mean, I just sit there and go, get a life, dude.
I know. I think the same thing. I mean, you watch they dust off these stars you never hear from otherwise. You know, to be the color commentators on the parade. You know, I have a feeling that maybe HDTV will be the second coming, because I remember color TV was like a very big deal. That NBC, which is the first with color, back in the 60s, you and I are old enough to remember this, you know, made it such a big deal because they were covering the Rose Bowl parade. And the first good-looking color TV I actually ever saw was doing the Rose Bowl parade. It was, like, very impressive. Of course, you know, now it's just boring and you just want to go have breakfast.
Yep, yeah. So how are you doing tonight, Russ?
Oh, I'm hanging in. General D.C. area is pretty mild. We were like 50 degrees today and just sort of hanging out and enjoying life, I guess. Boring, but good.
Boring, but good, huh?
Yeah. No mudslides. No endless rainstorms or anything else of the sort, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but you got a heating up political season coming, so...
Oh, yeah, well, you know...
Enjoy this while you have the opportunity.
The hot air always rises at the beginning of the spring. You know.
Yeah, that's for sure. So how are you tonight, Kevin?
Oh, okay.
And I understand we've got a new streaming server online tonight?
Yes, we do.
a new mirror site. And where did this one come from? It's called linuxinstallcds.com. But right at the moment, there's no website called linuxinstallcds.com.
Yep, but they are streaming for us.
Oh, well, it'll be interesting to find out what they actually do when they come above the horizon. But right now, thank you to the people at linuxinstallcds.com, whoever you are. And, well, I suppose we'll find that out shortly.
They are in Texas.
In Texas. And welcome to the family of mirror sites for the Linux Show. Couple of housekeeping items that we'll get out of the way before we get too far into the actual show. Number one is, if you were listening to the show 2 weeks ago, or if you've been paying attention to any of the press releases that have been going around the last couple of weeks, you're already aware that we're going to be broadcasting from the Linux World Expo. And we're very, very excited to be doing that. Our guest tonight is actually going to be talking about Linux World Conference and Expo later on tonight. And if you happen to be in the New York, New Jersey area, why don't you come on down? Go ahead and register for the show. You don't have to register for the conference to get into the show. Register for the show and come give us a visit on the expo floor. If you've got some time to kill, like you've got a day or two off of work and you'd like to perhaps spend half a day or a day hanging out with the people from the Linux Show, please contact us at staff@thelinuxshow.com. We're building a list of about half a dozen or so people that we're going to make use of to help us out during the expo. So if you got the time, come check us out. If not, well, you can listen to us broadcast 17 hours worth of broadcasting. You can listen to us broadcast at Show Day. So it proves to be a exciting and up-and-coming event. Looking forward to it. That's really it for the housekeeping items of immediacy. There will be an announcement made on next week's show because of a major screw-up done by me. During the last couple of shows when we've been on the air, I have been asking people to go to a particular link to download a real client and play around with it and give us some feedback. And I have, for the last, well, now it's 3 weeks, been giving people the wrong URL. I misread my email. So I have been directing to people to their street version, their existing working non-beta. And that's not the one we want people to go and look at. We want people to go and test their beta, the brand new Helix product. And so I have to apologize to everybody who has put the effort in and who has sent me these comments saying, boy, it works a lot like the one from a year ago. It doesn't seem like it's changed much. And I do need to apologize to people because it was just totally my screw-up. But we're going to get all of those details worked out and have a press release come out probably this coming weekend, directing people to a little download page to sign up and download the actual beta. And if you email us back, well, you'll see the details that come out later this week, but if you email us back after you download it, we'll put your name in a hat for a drawing, try and make up for some of the effort that people have already put through that has been sort of wasted. I do apologize for that, but more news on that during next week's show. Let's go ahead and jump right into segment number one of tonight's show. We've got quite a few stories up there already, and we'll go ahead and get started on them. Of course, the big story of today and the big story of the week is obviously the Kernel 2.6 release, and it's interesting. If you've gone out to the OSDL, Open Source Development Lab, website, and you've read some of the documentation about the new kernel, to read some of the reasoning behind what they have been heading for in terms of developing a Linux kernel that's going to be really rock solid for final acceptance by the mainstream enterprise. And results are out yet. They just released it today. Haven't heard a lot of people actually download and give any comments other than what we already know about the betas that have been out for quite a while. But, Kevin, have you got any comments on this being a new product?
Actually, it seems to be working pretty well for me so far.
So you've already got it running?
Yep.
Okay. And I know this was on your list, Russ. At least I think it was. Do you have any comments about this?
Actually, I don't think that one was on my list, was it?
Oh, okay. Well, I take it back.
Yeah, the only thing that really seemed to be missing was the AFS support.
Yeah. I think that is the only thing of the original expectation list that is missing. Was a little bit surprised. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised. But upon the release of 2.6, no mention was made, and probably this is good, I suppose, no mention was made about there being any SCO code in the 2.6 kernel.
Well, there's just so much of it there that, you know, why bother pointing it out?
Oh, yeah, it's all there. So,
be 2 million lines.
Yeah, all 2 million lines of it, that's for sure. Well, Russ, why don't we hand it off to you, and you can go for your first story of the week.
Don't you want to do Doc first? Because Doc has to get out, doesn't he?
Oh, that's right. Doc, why don't you cover your stories? Because I know you're...
Yeah, well, you've already covered the kernel. A small story is not really... two sort of related stories. They're both on the story links. One is Red Hat buys Sistina, and the other is that EMC... This is an older one, and I don't know if we covered it earlier, but EMC buys VMware. There's just a lot of acquisitions going on as the economy gets better and or at least as DOC gets more valuable. We're starting to see more and more acquisitions going on. I think it's just going to continue. I wouldn't be surprised, for example, to see. In fact, one of my predictions for the year is that Red Hat will be acquired by somebody. And I kind of hope not, but my bet is Oracle. That's just I have based on no information, but I just have a feeling about that one. I think that there's just going to be a lot of that going on. I noticed that Nat Friedman said that he wants Novell to be the premier Linux company, whatever that means. And I wonder now that Linux is sort of soaked into everything, if there's even such a thing as a Linux company anymore. Whether that's even a legitimate description of anything, but that's sort of two things together there. Another one is that we're starting something a little bit promotional, but it's a fun thing. Everybody's familiar with Meetup. Meetup has got a much higher profile now in the political season because so many political candidates, starting with Howard Dean, but certainly not restricted to him, are using Meetup. It's a Linux powered service that allows anybody to get to just start conversations in the real world at real world locations for whatever purpose. I mean, so Chihuahua lovers or Pekingese lovers or gun nuts or whatever can all get together around the world on a given day and talk about whatever the subject happens to be. And this is all organized on the web using Meetup software. So we're doing this with Linux Journal, and part of the idea is that we want our various journalists, myself included, wherever they happen to be, to get together with readers that are out there. It's somewhat experimental at this stage, but there was going to be a piece about it that I wrote that was going to be on the Linux Journal site today. It's probably going to go up tomorrow. So, but in any case, if you look up Linux Journal on Meetup, you'll see, you know, an opportunity to get together with people and talk about Linux journalism. And it's sort of a larger topic that I think is an interesting one, for me at least, because what's going on is that Linux as a topic is a much bigger topic than it was before. So what is the role in that changing environment of the sort of the traditional Linux advocates and users and the people who have been running the conversation for these years, and the new guys that may or may not care about as much about, say, you know, the GPL or licensing versus or free software versus open source or the whole thing with SCO or any of that stuff, you know, but may just want to use it to as a better building material. And so anyway, that's, we're interested in sort of reaching out to some of those people and seeing where that goes. So that's another thing that we're on. So those are my main ones right there.
Well, you had another one down there about real fun. Oh, Frontiers of Fun.
Oh, the Frontiers. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, I said, see. Yeah, that was my last Suit Watch newsletter. I send out a newsletter every 2 weeks. It's sort of like a more current version of Linux for Suits, which is a column that I write, but I'm writing it 3 months out for Linux Journal, so it tends to be about stuff that's going to be still relevant 3 months from now, whereas Suit Watch tends to be about whatever's on my mind at the moment. A guy named Bernie DeCoven is an old friend of mine. He's when I first met him many years ago, he said, "I'm always 5 years ahead of my time," and I asked him, "Well, how come I can see you now?" You know, but he's a very funny guy, and he's made the study of fun sort of his life's work. Among his fingerprints in the world are a lot of changes to school physical education curricula. You know, he was behind new games and the sort of the let's get past setting up games so you know you always have winners and losers, that kind of thing. And he's also one of the authors of the original idea that has turned into presentation software. The concept of taking a hierarchical bullet chart and then turning that outline into a slide that became a kind of software that ran on the Mac called Moore and on the PC called Grandview and that inspired PowerPoint, which and he never claimed any intellectual property on it, and so you know it grew and spread. It was essentially a public domain idea. Anyway, he and I just would talk a lot about fun and why fun is not more of a subject, since it's something we all love. You know, it's something we're all looking for. And a lot of us don't have it a lot of the time and get terribly serious about things. And I wrote the piece, and at the end of it I realized, wait a minute, Linus wrote this book called Just for Fun. And it is a real fun connection with Linux. And so that's sort of just, anyway, it's just a fun, it was a fun piece that I wrote, and so I wanted to point to it since I didn't get a chance last week.
Okay. And Russ, which story would you like to start out with?
Well, I'm going to hit a couple here together. There are two that both have to do with the Middle East and both have to do with open source, but kind of shows two different countries handling things quite differently. One is the finance ministry of Israel deciding that they're going to start distributing free software to people. And the other is the one called Floss in Iran. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time with either of those pieces, but they're both interesting looks because, you know, the Israel story seems to be all about cost, that the Israeli government is not thrilled with Microsoft's pricing. And according to some folks, like the folks over at IDC, they think this is all just a ploy to drive down Microsoft's prices. And that once Microsoft comes up with a number that Israel likes, that all this open source stuff in the government will just kind of go away.
That's wishful thinking.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays off. You know, is it really a price game or what? And you know, I don't know. We'll have to kind of see where the intent is for these people. But the other one has to do with free software in Iran, and there they make it very clear that the issue is not at all price, because since they're not holding to international agreements about copyright and so forth, you apparently can pick up Microsoft software for peanuts, just a couple bucks a disk or something like this, just like you can Linux software, because they're not paying royalties to anyone and so forth. But the issues there are quite different, and it has to do with some of the freedom aspects of it, as well as some other things. So that's, doing a kind of a compare and contrast of the two situations is quite interesting, considering that they're both inside the same sort of immediate geography, and yet the situations are very, very different, at least from what we can tell. Besides that, then, I have two other little pieces out there. One which I just find kind of interesting about a Linux-based VPN router over at Linux Devices that's apparently nearing initial release, and it just seems like a very interesting sort of project. Goodness knows we have all sorts of Linux-based devices out there right now doing routing and stuff like this, but this one seems very interesting in that it's taking a very open stance on all this sort of stuff, and it's not a question of, you know, did you release the code, et cetera, et cetera. They seem to be very much dealing on the up and up to make sure that open source remaining open source. And the other one, which is just has nothing to do with Linux per se, but we've talked about Wikipedia on the show before. And they were apparently having all sorts of server problems. And just a few days ago, a letter was put up on the site saying, hey, you know, if we could raise $20,000, we could get our servers upgraded and solve the problems that we're having. And apparently, just over the space of a few days, they now reportedly have almost $30,000 as of this morning. To solve the problem, and I thought that was absolutely wild, and I guess kind of shows how many people are really paying attention to Wikipedia these days. Obviously, it means something significant to a lot of folks to be able to raise that sort of money inside such a very short period of time on a holiday, in a holiday time period, even more so. But I just thought that was awfully interesting.
Yeah, they're up to 29,500 and some change. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Quite a immediate turnaround. They got to be pretty happy. That's real gratifying for them, I'm sure. But no, that's. That's definitely going to be a future big direction in the IP world is these books and other content based on copyleft, and it's an inevitability that things look like this are going to gain some real steam. So, is that it for your list tonight?
Yeah, that's it for me.
Well, I'd like to bring up one more story in the. One or two, actually. We do have one story up on the site about MySQL 5.0 coming out. And, people should take note of that. But one that's not specifically on the list that I thought I'd throw out there for anybody to comment on, controversial comments that I'm going to make right now, and a lot of people may not like the comment I'm about to make, but... got to call it as I see it. And a few weeks back, actually several weeks back, we had Bruce Perens on the show, and we were discussing User Linux. And told Bruce at the time that I'd sit back and watch and listen and hold my opinion until I'd seen some progress. And I know it's only been a month. Maybe it's been 5 weeks by now. But there are some things that I think people need to take note of. And, well, the first one is that, well, let me back up one step. First of all, I have absolutely, I want to make this clear, I have absolutely no problem with Bruce doing the User Linux project. He has every right to do whatever he wants to do. This is an open source world, okay? If he wants to develop his own distribution and get volunteers and maybe some businesses to support him, more power to Bruce. I couldn't be more pleased for him. However, the things that I'm trying to make some observation on are the original goals of what User Linux was intended, or at least apparently intended, to do, and what I consider an unfortunate direction that they're heading off in. And the first one is that User Linux was originally founded as a proposal that was linked to a conference, the creation of an open consortium on creating a desktop. And the idea would be that there would be this large umbrella distribution that would be the intellectual input, as well as the work in developing and supporting it, would be something that would be shared by a broad-based community. And that was the original expectation. However, the reality has been that if you have been following the list, the discussion list for User Linux, it's very unfortunate, some of the directions that they're going in. The first thing that surprised me was that within the first couple of days of the actual organization existing with an operating list, they almost immediately told the people in the KDE world to take a hike. And basically to go away. And there were comments, a plethora, lots and lots of comments on this list, telling the people from the KDE community to just not bother posting to the list anymore, because their comments were going to be ignored anyways. And I really don't think that that's a real smart way. If you're going to call something a User Linux based upon a consortium of desktop developers, I don't think you can afford to start out the process by alienating, 25% of the knowledge base that's out there in terms of the developers. There's a lot of KDE developers out there. And I think this is a really serious mistake that the crew that Bruce has set up is making. Also, and again, Bruce has every right in the world to do that if he chooses, and he did choose to tell the KDE people to go away. He has every right to do that, and he also has every right to choose every little component piece of how this thing is going to be put together and who's going to do the development and how the packages are going to be managed. He has that right. This is a free country. But I think he's making a mistake with some of the attitude that is being presented not only in the white paper, but also, again, on his list. His list. The attitude that people are projecting towards anybody who is looking to make money off of Linux, and let me back that up, the existing companies that are looking to make money. Some of the language I find very bothersome on the list, a direct quote from Bruce is, companies of the ilk and ilk has a definite negative connotation, of Red Hat. That kind of language is repeated over and over and over again, many, many times every day. And I think Bruce and the leadership behind User Linux need to take a step back away from what they're doing and look at not only how they're alienating potentially a lot of the development community, but I think that they need to take a step back and realize that they're potentially alienating a lot of the business community as well. I see real trouble ahead here. Russ, do you have any comment? Have you been following the list at all?
Unfortunately, I haven't been following it anywhere nearly as tightly as you've been, but I do have to say that you know, it sure doesn't sound like some of the directions that are going on there are going to support those original goals. And now, you know, there is always a wait and see sort of thing here that you know, maybe some things will change, but I'd hope that it would get off to a little bit better footing than what I've seen, but you know, I guess it sort of rests in the hands of the people doing the work as to what direction they're going to pick.
Yeah, probably the from a philosophical standpoint. And again, Bruce can do whatever he wants. You know, he's not going to listen to me. He hasn't listened to anybody else on how they're going to do this. So he's certainly not going to listen to me. But from a philosophical standpoint, part of the reason why the project from the get-go bothered me was the potential of some of the commentary in his white paper of how that can impact on negatively on the free market. And here's what I mean. Probably the singularly most effective way you can get things to be developed quickly, to be developed accurately, and to be done so relatively economically is for them to do battle in the free market. That being said, some of the decisions that have been made in terms of what will be allowable within the development of User Linux, at least for the short term, to me, injects an artificial market support for things that aren't necessarily superior. And here's what I'm getting at. One of the comments was made that the User Linux project will not initially support MySQL. And it will not support MySQL because it's not 100% cut and dried free open source. It has multiple licenses. MySQL, however, is an extremely successful product that has been tested and succeeded in the free market. You can't then turn away, well, you can, but the danger of artificially supporting a product that is an inferior product does you no good in the long run. To disallow MySQL and other things in similar situations. KDE is the same thing. They don't want KDE as part of the loop because there is a license fee for the toolkit that is used to develop KDE. KDE itself is free, but the toolkit has a license. And so because of some extremely hardline, and I understand why Bruce is doing this. He wants it to be 100% open source, every possible thing. But that's to me, injecting artificial supports that really don't prove out in a free market culture. They're not a good idea to do that in the long run. You need to let stuff stand and survive on its own merit. Communism failed, and that's a seriously important thing that we have to face. Doc, have you been following this at all? Oh, I guess Doc is offline already.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting, if I can just throw something in on this, is that the MySQL one particularly, I find...
That baffled me.
I find that very troublesome, because I've been thinking recently a little bit about some of the licensing thing that's going on, and, you know, some of the distributions that seem to be you know, trying their best to kind of hit the letter of the law when it comes to the GPL, but inside some ways trying to keep the stuff that they're sharing to be at a minimum. And the MySQL folks, unless something has changed that I'm not aware of, their thing was that you can get it under the GPL, or we can sell it to you under a commercial license. But the bottom line was that any changes that they made to MySQL would end up in the GPL version. That they weren't, last I checked at least, they weren't holding back technology for the commercial only version of MySQL. I don't know if that's changed, but that to me, when you know, the fact that they at least were doing that was terrific, because it wasn't an attempt to hold back. They were simply, you know, they were simply playing with a revenue model for companies that wanted to use it as a closed source thing to do whatever. But it wasn't really depriving the community of the benefit, so to speak. So I don't know. I just find that baffling. Unless MySQL has gone the way of, you know, the commercial version and the light version,
yep.
Which it at least never used to be.
Yep. A couple more quick comments just to wrap this up, because we do have our guest waiting in the phone queue. So, the MySQL is a typical example of the philosophy of the development of the path of development, and I can almost buy all of that. You know, I think that, you know, my personal opinion is that they need to allow for both. If they're going to be intellectually honest and open, they have to allow for both. But okay, I'm not waving conspiracy flags, everybody. Bruce is a friend. I have no problem with Bruce. Bruce and I disagree regularly. So, again, I don't want to make a bigger deal of this as it is. However, some of the fundamental principles on which this project was even started are yet to be thoroughly flushed out. Some of the original commentary prior to the release of the white paper was that there were major enterprise companies that were changing their plans to do a Linux conversion because of the licensing change at Red Hat. There was also supposedly several ISPs that were moaning about the changes at Red Hat, that this was potentially going to drive ISPs out of business. The last I checked, the source code for Red Hat was still downloadable and free. And so a lot of this initial premise stuff, to me, is not in evidence yet, and I really would like to see the user Linux folks to sit back and you know, really present us with the evidence as to why this is needed. Because so far, I just have to be honest. I've watched the list every day. I haven't read every single posting, but I've probably read 80% of the postings that have gone on that list over the last couple weeks. And for the life of me, I don't understand why they're not contributing their efforts to Debian. I'm really still a little bit baffled as to why this need even exists for this project.
And you know, the other possibility too, if you've seen the statement recently from Mandrake has taken kind of the opposite pole of Red Hat in this, saying, you know, we're going to make everything free regardless, and we're not holding back. And you know, it would be interesting to see people supporting that effort as well.
Yep. Well, we better call it an end to segment number one and take a real short break and come back on the other side of a break with our guest from segment number two, Warwick Davis from IDG. So everybody kick back and relax. Kevin's going to put on a tune, and we will be right back with segment number two of the Linux Show for December the 30th, 2003. Everybody hang in there. We'll be right back.
Nobody.
And we're back.
And this is segment number two of the Linux Show for December the 30th, 2003, the last show for Volume 6 of the Linux Show. Looking forward to starting Volume 7 next week in 2004. Kevin, I cannot believe that we've been on the air this long. It just shocks me when I think about it. It seems like yesterday when we started doing this. It's been a lot of fun. But let's go ahead and jump on into segment number two. Tonight we've got a special guest coming to talk to us about the latest news on what's going on with the Linux World Conference and Expo coming up on January the 20th through the 23rd at the Javits Center in New York City. Joining us tonight is Warwick Davies. He's the, Group Vice President?
That's right, Group Vice President, yep.
For the IDG World Expo Business Unit.
Correct.
And, well, welcome to the show, Warwick.
Thanks, Jeff.
Glad to have you. Let's start out with the probably the most logical question I can think of to ask it at this late date, because it's coming up in 3.5 weeks. Is it too late for people to register for the conference or the expo? Can they still do that online?
Absolutely. In fact, I encourage people that are thinking about going to do that before the 19th, because there's still some great discounted rates. If you sign up before the show to go to the expo, it's free until the 19th, after which it costs you. And the conference, we've got some really neat packages for you if you want to really get some detailed content, and I can go into that in a minute. But anyone in the Linux industry is going to be at the show. It's a real exciting event, as I know, Jeff, you know. So I'm just thrilled to be on the air with you right now and talking about what we got there. But yeah, absolutely. And the website address is www.linuxworldexpo.com.
Yep.
For more information.
Yeah. Next question I've got for you is specifically on the expo site itself. We can go into the conference in just a minute, but on the expo site itself, when we were trying to find a booth space going back about a month ago, we were having trouble. I mean, we were way in the back of the hall looking for a booth space. With the recession that we've just come out of, are you guys just a little bit thrilled at the number of companies that have gotten booth space for the expo?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been phenomenal. We had a situation in San Francisco in August where we had a full house in the South Hall, and we were literally pushing people off the show floor and shutting off the lights and telling people, please, you know, the thing's closed. And I think there's a real excitement on the exhibit floor that's gone forward to New York. We're going to have over 140 companies there, and you're right. We're getting close to the back of the hall at this point, as you know. So it's just going to be, yeah, it's great. I mean, Computer World has said 2004 is going to be the year of Linux. In terms of the response that we're getting for the event, it's just been incredible that a lot of the major IT companies are really seeing, opportunity for a huge business in 2004, and I think the show will showcase that.
Yeah. Have you got any projections yet in terms of numbers of people who might be attending the conference and the expo?
Well, that's a tough one because, as I think you probably know, I've been at World Expo since July, and we've taken a lead on working with a number of our friendly competitors in the industry to start to set some standards in terms of how we report attendance. In the past, at our company, we have reported attendance based on a turnstile count, which means that it didn't matter if the same person attended more than one time or went through the gates one time. You'd be counted. If you went through the gates five times, you'd be counted five different ways, and that's the way in the past the attendance has been counted. In the future, we're actually having a third-party company review and verify the attendance. So to give you numbers, I can't do that because it's because I don't because obviously I haven't verified the numbers. But I think what people can expect if they were at New York last year that it's going to be as packed as it was last year. That's
I hope so. I just was at Comdex Week in Vegas just last month, and although Comdex itself was fairly filled, the other shows that are in town that week, because it always has a tendency of gathering lots of computer shows to Vegas that week, they were ghost towns. And so I was really surprised that your numbers were as high as they were in August. And I'm really looking forward to eager anticipation with you having another successful event, because I think it really does show, especially happening right by Wall Street, it does show the people on Wall Street how serious this industry group really is when all these other trade shows are ghost towns. It's real important for the Linux community to have successful events like that.
Absolutely, yeah. As I said, we're looking forward to a full house, and we've had a lot of help in getting the word out, in jumping on board and helping us to develop content. We've got a lot of .org organizations, if I can say that, that are involved, and you know, a bunch of other stakeholders. So we're, you know, since I've been on board at the company, it's really exciting, and I can say very different than some of the I've been involved in setting up IT events in other areas before, and I'm also involved in the Macworld show as well. And between the two sets of communities, there's a real passion, and it's great because people are, you know, the whole essence of the open source community is really getting on board and really helping drive things and putting in the extra effort, and it's a real pleasure to be part of.
Yep. To just give you an idea, right now I'm just scanning through the list of people who are in our IRC chat room right at this moment, and I see four different .org exhibitors inside the chat room right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're excited.
Yeah, and I've had a chance to talk to a few of them since I've joined, and clearly, you know, you don't get that excitement in other areas, even in IT. So I think it's helping us drive the event forward.
Let's focus on the conference,
mm-hmm.
If we can, for a few moments. How many different tracks are you running at the conference?
We're running 8 tracks, and the tracks are Linux and business management and deployment, network Linux, real sysadmin from the trenches, security issues, software developer issues, emerging technologies, application development and standards, kernel cluster updates, and we have a brand new Linux and government track as well.
Yes, I heard about that. I'm really hoping that you get a really good turnout. When I have some free moments during the day, I'm going to sort of hover in the hallways at that particular track, because that's something that excites me a great deal, as Linux and government. There's, I believe, if I've gotten this correctly, there's something that is sort of special being planned for the floor of the expo hall. It's a taste of Linux area.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, the neat thing about the show is that there's a lot of content in the show that you can actually go and see, which is free. So again, I urge everyone who's interested or even got an inkling that they might want to attend to at least register as a visitor for the exhibition, because that will get you into a number of sessions that are taking place on the show floor for free. And as you said correctly, Jeff, we have a Taste of Linux stage towards the back of the expo floor, and there are a number of free sessions, such as Making Money with Open Source, Why Linux is Your Solution, Linux 101, you know, some of the basic Linux subjects, but also some more advanced subjects, such as the ones I've mentioned, are also going to be there as well. So for those who want to get a sense of what the show's about and wants to do spend a lot of time on the expo floor, there's actually a lot of content that is free. And for those who want to get more arms deep in some of the technical sessions and even some of the workshops that we have, that's available as well. And as I mentioned before, sign up before the 19th of January so you can take advantage of some discounts there.
Are the Birds of a Feather meetings specifically for the conference members?
Nope. Well, I mean, no, you don't have to be a conference attendee to attend those. Going directly to the website, you can get a bit more detail on what the subjects that will be talked about. Usually those happen towards the end of the day on the exposition days, and more information. Again, as you probably know, Jeff, it's a great networking opportunity for all the different sessions and birds of a feather type things. There's a lot of best practices happening and people that are tackling a lot of the challenges in developing Linux that'll be at the show. So it's really a huge vortex for anyone who's interested in what's going on, because everyone will be there.
Yeah, there's one of those birds of a feather sessions that really completely caught me off guard completely, that there would be that many people aggressively interested in meeting to discuss this. But you actually got a session on January the 21st from 5 or 5:30 till 7 on developing applications for eBay, which which really piqued my interest. It's completely out of the mainstream from what I would have expected. But there's a lot of the birds of feather sessions that I think are far more predictable, and a couple of them that I'm going to try again to attend myself because they're after our broadcast hours. There's one in particular called Open Source Capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the sound of that. I'm going to get myself into that birds of feather session. So other than what we've discussed, what are some of the outstanding either features of the expo or some of the keynotes that you've got planned that are other reasons why people are going to want to attend?
Okay, good question. I think in the keynote sessions, we talk about those first. We've actually got Jack Messman, who's the chairman and CEO of Novell, who, as everyone listening probably knows, has made some major steps in coming into the Linux area with some of their latest acquisitions. He's actually going to be the opening keynote. And I think he's going to have a lot of interesting things to say on where Novell sees the industry going and where the industry is going in general. In addition to that, we've got Sam Greenblatt, who's going to be talking about some of the cultural, political, and economic forces driving the global acceptance of Linux, specifically as it relates to the Beijing 2008 Olympics and what's going on with how they decided to go with Linux to really drive the IT infrastructure for the games. Ross Morey, who's one of the drivers of IBM's initiative in Linux, will also be talking. In addition, you're talking about eBay, talking about the virtual world. Tom Killalea, the Vice President of Infrastructure from Amazon.com, is going to talk about how Linux runs their business, which I think that's one that I'm certainly very interested in attending myself, because, you know, this is a company that's actually doing it. How do they do it? So there's some really neat keynotes, and Oracle will be talking about also what they see the next challenges for companies developing their business on Linux as well. So, again, there's a lot of lightning rods in the industry who are going to be addressing the audience and kind of pointing the direction forward on where we're going.
And, of course, you do have the return of one of the historically most popular events at Linux World Expo, and that is the Golden Penguin Bowl.
Correct, yeah.
Russ Pavlicek on the panel tonight is... one of the participants in the Golden Penguin Bowl. Russ, do you know what team you're actually on?
I have no idea. I don't think anyone else will either until we actually show up.
So you don't know if you're a nerd or a geek.
I've been sacrificed to this thing, so oh my golly.
Well, I could tell you it was my fourth day at work while I was in San Francisco at the Linux show there, and the sales office was right next to the area where the Golden Penguin Ball was happening, and the roar was so loud. I couldn't hear. I was talking to someone in the sales office. I couldn't hear what they were saying, and they were sitting across the table. So that's always, you know, people really get excited.
Yeah.
About the Golden Penguin Bowl.
It's a wild, for people who haven't seen it, it's an absolutely wild trivia contest, basically. And you know, one of the favorite things that Chris DeBona will throw up is a chemical equation. The question is food or poison, and you know, it's the question of who remembers their basic high school chemistry at that point to figure out whether this is a pleasant compound or an unpleasant compound, and from Linux kernel stuff to science fiction to everything in the esoteric, it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, we're counting on you, Russ. So far. Everybody from the Linux show who has ever been in the Penguin Bowl has never answered a question wrong.
Well, I this is actually my second time at the Penguin Bowl, and
well, then I may be wrong on that. Did you answer any wrong? Did you ask that?
I don't think so.
Okay,
I didn't handle too many, quite frankly, but. Because like a lot of the stuff having to do with science fiction and stuff like this was just off the tap for me, but I can't recall any.
Well, it's definitely fun, and again, anybody in the on the entire Eastern Seaboard, that's a great way to finish off the 21st, the first day of the actual expo itself. Am I wrong in saying that the conference starts on the 20th?
No, that's correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Conference starts the 20th through the 23rd, and the expo is the 21st through the 23rd.
Correct, yep.
Yep, that's what I had.
You got your facts right, Jeff.
Well, I got my little piece of paper here
right.
With my cheat sheet notes. So, well, very, very cool. Very cool. You may not want to answer this question. Is SCO coming?
Well, if so, I guess they'll have to have armed guards. It'll be an interesting. That'll be an interesting panel session, don't you think?
Hmm?
Yeah, that would be. Good golly.
Yeah, I know this is before your time at IDG, but a couple of years ago, there was a company by the name of Linux One,
oh.
Who was sort of a scam, and they showed up to the expo in New York at the Javits Center, and a whole bunch of the vendors were giving people extra trade show swag to go stand in front of their booth and prevent anybody from walking up to it. Pretty unusual events that particular day. I wouldn't expect similar if SCO was to actually show up. But oh well. So, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the event?
Just I think you mentioned in passing, and I did the .org pavilion. It's an area where IDG has decided to make a commitment to the Linux community in supporting a lot of the smaller organizations that don't necessarily have products or services to sell but are really helping drive the Linux community forward. So there's an area called the .org Pavilion where there's a whole bunch of folks of that category there, and that's close to where you will actually be as well, Jeff.
Yes.
Including the New York Linux User Group. Users Group will have a booth there as well. So those who are interested in getting involved in the New York area for the show. It's a good place to coalesce. In addition to the OSDL, we'll have a booth there, and a bunch of other folks that I think you were talking about, the KDE as well. They've got a booth in that area. I think you were talking before I came online. So that's one other thing I would certainly mention. In addition, we are featuring a Linux Financial Summit, which is a special program for IT executives and managers specifically from the financial services institutions. And for more information on the specific content of that, again, I'd welcome folks that are listening to go to the website as well to check out more on that. But all in all, it's a huge amount of content, not all of you which you have to pay for, but you do need to register before the 19th to get into the expo for free. Otherwise, it's $15, I guess.
And I do encourage those people who want to learn more to go to the conference, because as conferences go, it's very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality of the information at the Linux World Conference and Expo has historically been pretty good. I got presenters like Russ, so
yep.
That'll be good.
Yep.
One last question I've got on my list here is, and Kevin and Russ, if you have any more, go ahead and jump in too, but how is the bookings on the Rookery coming? Traditionally, that's up and down. Some events it's very full, some events it's empty. I sort of use that as a gauge of venture capital money when you see a lot of people coming into the Rookery area.
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting many bookings into that area?
I think at the moment we have, if I'm correct, about 6, so it's a little bit lower than it has been in the past, but again, it's another area where we're looking to see the emerging companies in the industry. We've actually, I should mention that Apple has just signed up in the Rookery as an example of a company that's just come in. In general, we're trying to help companies that are really interested in having a shop window such as the event is, and working with them to get them, you know, more exposure and give them an opportunity to really come into the event in a situation where they just turn up, they plug their stuff in, and they're ready to roll. So I guess in answer to your question, it's probably going to be 6 to 8 companies, which is a little bit lower than I guess it has been in the past. But in general, it's a program that people are really excited about.
Yeah, that also, I do believe, has a tendency of booking up right at the last minute, too.
Yeah, that's one of all the other features of that, yep.
Yep. Okay. Well, I can tell you I am definitely looking forward to coming. We actually have a product that we are working on at this moment that is sort of a combo product that we're working on and the people at Real Networks are working on with us, called the Studio in a Box. And we're going to be showing up with that Studio in a Box, and the people from Real Networks are going to submit that as a product for evaluation for one of the awards. So I've got my fingers crossed we may actually win an award.
Well, you never know.
No, I'm going to look forward to actually coming face-to-face, and when I see you, maybe I'll remember where we met.
You may, yes. I guess we talked about, I got one of those unforgettable names. There's no hiding for me.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Warwick, thank you for joining us this evening, and make sure you carve us out a little bit of time, or if not you, somebody from the expo. What we really like to do when we do these broadcasts from the actual floor is we like to have somebody from our host to stop by towards the end of the day and sit down with us and do a wrap-up in terms of what seemed to have been the buzz of the day, what were the more popular conferences. So make sure you set aside a little bit of time for us to stop by and visit us at our broadcast booth.
Okay, I'll look forward to doing that. Great. Thanks, Jeff, for your time, and I look forward to meeting as many of you in the audience as want to come to the event, because it's going to be a good one.
Yep, I'm sure it will be. Okay, well, Thanks again, Warwick.
Thank you.
We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. All right. Bye-bye.
Good night. And to all you people out there listening, we'd like to thank you for stopping by. This is a hallmark. This is our last show for 2003, moving on into 2004. Again, as I said earlier, Kevin, it's been really cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's been cool, dude. And I couldn't have asked for a better partner and a better friend to take this trip with. It has been such a hoot for the last 6 years. And looking forward to who knows how many more years people will keep us on the air. As long as you people keep on telling your friends and keep on telling other Linux people about us, keep spreading the word. So when you disconnect from the show tonight, make sure you pull up some email addresses and tell 10 friends about the Linux show. If you like what we do, throw us a donation. In particular, we've got a link up to buy Kev a Gettner for Christmas. Well, Christmas is coming gone. Good news is we're about $275 into our fund already. We need to raise, I would say about $1,700, so we're a good ways off yet, but we're in no particular hurry. We do want to deploy that Gettner sometime in the late spring, early summer, if at all possible. This will allow you people out there, the listeners, to call us live on the Linux show from anywhere in the world. But we got to have that Gettner unit first before we're going to be able to take that level of interactive calling. If you are in the mood, or if you'd like to be a sponsor, go to our website and click on one of the links and become a community or a vendor sponsor of the Linux show. Help us stay on the air for another 6 years. Who knows? And again, if you don't have cash but you have bandwidth, we'd love it if you'd step forward and become one of our mirror sites. Need bandwidth. Always in need of bandwidth. We just can't seem to ever get enough bandwidth. So there is a link on our website of how to become a mirror. It's real simple. It takes literally no effort at all. And once you've got it all set up, give Kevin an email, and he'll add you to the streaming server list on our website and give you a little plug. We like to return the favor as best as we can. So thanks, everybody. We really do appreciate you stopping by every week. Make sure you catch next week's show. Arnie will be back. We will be doing our best of 2003. We won't have a guest next week. We don't need a guest when we do that wrap-up show. It's probably going to end up being a long show, so make sure you have a six-pack of beer ready to go for next Tuesday night. Until then, everybody, this has been the Linux Show, the last Linux Show for 2003. We'll see you next week.
From every dawn to every dusk of every day. If she is the boat and he is the breath that fills the gale, the crest and fall and thrust and thrall, the bill on the sail. If he is the sextant, she is the stars by which he guides. From sombering sea to port at every evening tide. If she is the gull and he is the sanguine song she cries. A wistful, wordless question boasts to see the sky. If he is the house and calm and she's a summer storm. That drowns him in her furious skin and hungry wild and warm.